Action. Starring David Janssen as Dr. Richard Kimball, an innocent victim of blind justice, falsely convicted for the murder of his wife.
Oh, it's time for me to talk. Hi, everybody. Talking fugitive with the usual crew. Talking fugitive with the gang. Kitty and Bob and Ken and hopefully you. Ever since, you know, we put our most regular caller on the program, we can't get people to call in very much. Much more of an archive audience, and that's what everything is turning into. Anyway, if you do want to be on the program tonight, it's 800-407-5728, or you can email during the program, talk@ksav.org. Any other time you want to email the many hosts here, it's fugitive@ksav.org. All right, and enough of that. Let's start things off tonight with Bobby Neer.
Thanks a lot, Dave. You know, that really scares me. Maybe the reason we don't have any callers now is because Ken was the only person listening, and now he's on the show.
It's always a risk, you know, when you get when the hosts start to outnumber. You know, I got the Dawn Wells coming on tonight on my program, and she has more fan clubs than I have fans.
Oh, yes, I know.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. Well, we're here tonight to continue our subject from 2 weeks ago, which was Richard Kimball's relationships with women and why he doesn't close the deal on any of them. And we covered most of the obvious women in the first part of the program. I had had some contact since then with Lee, who listens to the show, of course, in the archives and runs the Talking Fugitive website. And she had made some comments about the show. I'd asked her to put it in an email, but she didn't really have the time. But she did make a few comments to me, and she pointed out in our last show, I had indicated, as I normally do, that I thought that if Richard Kimball was going to have an affair with anybody and actually go the rest of the way with it, it would have been with Karen. That would have been my obvious choice, because I think she's more worthy than anybody. But she points out that probably would have been very unlikely because she was being watched by everybody, which is true, and I'd forgotten about that. I mean, she had her uncle, she had Eric, she had her boyfriend, and they were all keeping her on a very short leash. So in all likelihood, there probably would have been, of all the relationships, probably less opportunity there for him to do anything than with these other women. I mean, even the kiss they shared at the end of part one in the truck there was probably risky enough. So
actually,
I thought that was a very good point.
Actually, Bob, I don't know that I agree with that.
Really?
Yeah, and the reason I say that is because I don't think she was on that short of a leash, because her own boyfriend loaned her and Kimball the boat to go sailing on.
Yeah, but people were watching. I'm not saying they could stop her, but, you know.
Well, how do we know they didn't do something on the boat?
Well, we don't know that. That's my whole point. I mean, I don't.
And then she was obviously able to go over to his place. She went over there by herself in that second episode, so it's not like she was walking out. She always had an escort or a chaperone everywhere she went. I mean, it seems like she was going places
herself. Lee said to me that, you know, perhaps the real reason for any of this is because Richard Kimball is just worried. He's got too much to worry about. With people watching, whether they are watching or not, the perception is that they probably are. He's got too much to be concerned about. He doesn't have a wife anymore. He doesn't, you know, have to worry about that, but he's got to worry about other things. And I think she made a good point about that, you know, there's too much of a risk there involved, which is probably why it probably would have been unlikely. But I'm not suggesting that I'm probably saying that she was on a short leash was not the right way to say it. It's true that her boyfriend was kind of ambivalent about the whole thing. He knew that there was a new guy in town who had eyes for her, and he just kind of acted like it didn't even matter, which I found very annoying. But, yeah, a lot of that is true. She also had said to me that, I found this kind of amusing, she said to me perhaps he didn't do any sex scenes in the series because David Janssen was embarrassed to do that one. I rather doubt that, and we'll get in the second part of the program. We'll leave you to tell us exactly why it was highly unlikely that David Janssen would have been afraid to do with on-screen sexing. So, you know, but we'll cover that in a few minutes. I wanted to bring up, as far as the first half here, talk about certain women who he had an opportunity to have an affair with. In Angels Travel on Lonely Roads, which is a two-part story, as we all know, in which Kimball helps a nun, Sister Veronica, get across the mountains into California. And on their way there, they stop at this kind of mountaintop general store, and they meet a very creepy character called Chuck Mathers. And his sister-in-law is there running the place. And she immediately takes a liking to Kimball, so much so that in the middle of the story, there's this kind of prolonged, several scenes actually, in which she goes through a lot of trouble to make it very clear to Richard Kimball. It's not really a sexual thing. I watched it again last night, but it's very bizarre because she hardly knows him at all. She's met him just, I don't know, a couple of hours ago.
Yeah.
And she's already suggesting to him not just that she has a job for him, that he can stay for a while and work, but that he can stay a lot longer, and then when he turns it down, because he makes it obvious that though she has eyes for him, he doesn't think much of her, she says, well, that's okay. I mean, I've done all that in the past. She's a widow. And she says, this can be just a platonic relationship, too, if that's what you want. I know you and I have talked about this before, and you found this very bizarre that this woman would act this way towards a man she doesn't even know.
Yeah, she's met him for 2 hours, and she's ready to have him move in with her. That is strange. I mean, to me, it's even more bizarre than the Lucy story. Just because she just doesn't seem like the type of person that would just want to pick up a guy and have him move in with her.
Yeah, and she's very lonely. I mean, I'm kind of putting a little more on this than probably it deserves, because it's not really a sex thing the way it is with these other women who look at him obviously as a love interest. She doesn't really look at him that way. She makes it clear she's lonely. She's at the top of the mountain. She's living with his obnoxious brother-in-law. And this good-looking guy comes along, and she's just, you know, she's taking the opportunity. But even in that story, when she finds out that a man named Richard Kimball is in the area and the police are looking for him, she still offers him the chance to stay there and virtually live with her. I mean, I could have accepted it if it had just been a matter of offering him a job, a temporary job. But it's more than that, and there's like three scenes, one coming after the other, in which he keeps on increasing the deal for him. Well, you can do this. Well, if you don't want to do that, you can do this. And if you don't really want to go to bed with me, we can just be friends. So it's kind of sad, really, to look at this. She's a very pretty woman, and you would not think that she would have to act this way.
Yeah, precisely. And you'd think, you know, if she's that lonely, why doesn't she just sell the place and move where there's people?
Right.
But she doesn't have to be so lonely and have the only thing for companionship is this loser brother-in-law.
And this is what I was talking about when I said there are lots of opportunities for Kimball to take advantage of women the way some men would. Here's another perfect opportunity to say, well, I got nothing to lose. I mean, this woman likes me, and I haven't done this in a while, and maybe I'll just stay here and get what I can out of her, and I'll leave. I mean, so what? Who cares? But, you know, there's always this effort, and true, sincere effort to show him as a very good person who would never do that. So that actually, they always go out of their way to show this. Ken, I know you have some comments to make about some other women who you thought something might have happened with but didn't.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Angels Travel on Lonely Roads. I was disappointed in that episode in part two. You know, you have Janet there, and I believe it was the barn scene. They were talking,
right,
and then she's coming on to him,
right.
And to me, as a fan, I'm watching the show, and I'm kind of hoping they do get together. She's a nice girl, she's pretty, and she's lonely. And when Kimball rejected her, I was mad at Kimball there. And I also thought that Kimball had some other missed opportunities too. There's two I want to point out.
Yeah.
I remember the episode two in the series, The Witch. You have the school teacher, Emily Norton, played by Patricia Crowley. She is gorgeous. But what I liked about her was she was simple, she was genuine, she was sincere, and she was not dysfunctional like some of the other women we've seen. And I thought those two would make a good pair, too. And when Kimball, they were talking in the classroom, they're talking back and forth. And it just seems like Kimball's not even interested at all in her.
Well, it seemed like they weren't really interested in each other. I mean, she didn't really seem like she was all that interested in having a relationship with anyone.
Yeah.
As well as Kimball wasn't interested.
I was hoping there that those two would get together. I'm kind of, as I'm watching the episode and they're talking, I'm talking to myself and I'm saying, you know, that's a nice couple right there. Instead, Kimball spends more time with the little girl who's, you know, that episode, The Witch, I didn't like that one. But there's one more girl also, and that is in episode 9, Ticket to Alaska. You remember the opening scene? I think Kimball's shooting with the rifle, they have some target practice or whatever, and he's talking to that woman there. I forgot her name. You remember that? Remember that scene, Bob?
Well, I remember the scene, but I don't remember specifically the woman's name.
I don't know which
one they're
talking about. There's a woman on there who's already having an affair with, the first officer on the boat.
No, not that girl. The other girl who talks to
Kimball. Oh, I know. Yeah, I can see her in front of me. Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
I forgot which one she is, but that was a nice couple there.
Yeah, but they get off track right away. I mean, you know, it's a funny thing about it, because they look like in certain stories they're going to go down that road,
yeah.
But writers seem to lose interest. I don't know. It's very strange. I always say about this series, they want to have it both ways, and they want to do it, but they don't want to do it. They want to show it, but they don't want to show it. And so you have some people, some women, who look like they're the best people in the world to even fool with, and yet there seems to be something there. And other people you look at and you go, well, that would be a nice matchup, and yet nothing comes of it. So, I know who you're talking about. And there are a lot of women kind of on the outside in certain episodes who you look at and you go, well, this might be something, but it somehow never turns into that. While we still have time in the first half of the show here, I want to mention something else. I talked in the last show about this all being about opportunity, about all these women making themselves available to Kimball and having the opportunity to have an affair with him. Kimball is very ambivalent all the way through here. I mean, he kisses them, but he looks like, well, you know, I have better things to do with my time. I have other things to worry about. I don't have time for this. And yet, you know, there's more subtle ways that he makes himself available. If you're watching this series carefully, you'll notice that in the vast majority of the episodes, David Janssen is always walking around with the top of his shirt open. I mean, he seems to have a permanent wardrobe malfunction that makes the one by Janet Jackson in the Super Bowl several years ago look about as accidental as they claimed it was. Unless he's wearing a uniform of some kind, or he's dressed in a suit and tie to hitch a ride, which, of course, we all know everybody does, he's always walking around with that shirt unbuttoned, and I think this is very deliberate, and I have a feeling that David Janssen may have been the only actor in Hollywood at the time who had two hairdressers in makeup room, one for his head and one for his chest, because they're always, that's always going on, and you always see that. Now, of course, that's for the women in the audience, but you run a risk there, because some women like that, some do not. But obviously, they were playing to that. It's just out there too much. In Landscape with Running Figures, in that famous scene in the street there at the end, there's a frenzy of that, as Marie Gerard actually claws at him until she finally managed to practically rip his jacket and his shirt off. So we finally get to that point. But there's a lot of that going on in this series, and it's like he's there, and he's saying, yeah, I know I'm good-looking, and by the way, you know, maybe. So he may not be quite as ambivalent about this as it appears to be on the surface.
Well, and Bob, I wanted to also bring up an episode where you were commenting about how in this series it's kind of like they want to show it without actually showing it. And one of the episodes that I think that's very obvious in is that dreadful episode, Middle of a Heat Wave.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the first 5 minutes are interesting, and then it went downhill. But in those first 5 minutes, Kimball is sitting in a restaurant with the Carol Rosen character named Laurel, and he's breaking up with her. He's telling her that he's got to move on. He's leaving town. And she's just breaking down into complete hysterics. And, you know, and it's obvious that they have been dating for a while, and it's clear to me that something has been going on here, because she is just way too upset for a woman who was just, you know, meeting this guy for a cup of coffee periodically.
All right, listen, we're going to take a break and have a cup of coffee here ourselves. I'm going to go comb out my chest, So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes, and less than 2 minutes, about 60 seconds. Stick around. We'll be right back on Retro Radio.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dave White, and with me today are Dr. Phil.
Hello.
Homer Simpson.
Woo-hoo!
And Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Good morning.
These guys are here to help me tell you about my program, Talkin' Television with Dave White on KSAV.
I have a feeling some bad stuff is about to go down.
Every Tuesday from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time, we have a fun discussion of television past and present.
Is that the truth or a lie?
What do you guys think of my program?
No longer crap.
Boring.
Outrageous.
And what about my co-host, television guru Tim Carmody?
The drunk pimp.
Jerkass!
But don't take their word for it. Tune in and join in every Tuesday, 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time on KSAV.
All right, and we are back with Bobby and Kitty and Ken talking Fugitive. If you got any comments you want to make, 800-407-KSAV. You know, in the early days of television, sponsors had a lot more to say about how a show was produced and how it was done. What do you think The Fugitive would have been like if, say, Nair would have been the sponsor?
I'm not even sure that stuff's around today.
Well, listen, but never mind my bad jokes. Let's get back to serious stuff. What about, you're going to take a vacation in 2 weeks, right?
Right. We're going to take, actually, October off, and then we're going to skip 2 weeks, and our next show after tonight will be Tuesday, October the 31st, which just so happens to be Halloween.
All right, and what's anything special planned for that?
Yeah, we're going to do a special Halloween show. We're going to have some special theme music that night that is kind of Halloween oriented, and Leave is creating some special animation and special things at the Talking Fugitive website. It's not there now and won't be there for a while yet, but that'll be very interesting to look at, and when it's ready I'll announce that on the Fugitive User Reviews board. And that night we're going to talk about, well, our title of the show is Witchy Women and Scariest Villains of the Fugitive. Because, you know, there's a lot of people here that we have not covered. We're generally doing classic episodes of the series when we do this show. But there are a lot of stories that were less than classic. Some of them were actually awful, but still had very interesting characters in them. So we decided that, because it's Halloween, we will do that. And it's going to be a special night. Like I said, we'll have some special music, and it should be very interesting. And I just want everybody to know that I think it's going to be so interesting that I've decided to be on the show that night, which is unusual for me on Halloween night, because usually on Halloween night I'm in the pumpkin patch with Linus waiting for the great pumpkin to arrive.
Should I wear a costume that night?
Should you?
Yes.
Just come the way you're normally dressed. That's scary enough.
All right.
And usually I'm out there, so I can only hope that the great pumpkin does not arrive during the 30 minutes that I'm on the show. So that will be in 4 weeks, and I don't know how the world will survive 2 weeks from now, but I just hope you guys can find a way to cover it. It's not going to be easy, that's for sure. All right, in this second half of the show, we have to bring up somebody we have not mentioned yet, and for a reason, and that is Suzanne Plachet, who appeared in 2 episodes of The Fugitive, one in season 2, the second story of the season, and one in season 3. In season 2, she appears in a story called World's End, which she portrays an old family friend who always had a crush on Richard Kimball. Supposedly, she attended the trial, although we never saw her there. And she comes upon some information about the one-armed man, namely that he no longer exists, that he's dead, and decides that Kimball has no reason to hang around anymore. There's no hope. So she basically, even though after a while she finds out that's not true, she lies to him because she intends to spirit him off to Brazil, of all places, where she will kind of live with him as her boy toy for the rest of her life and be very, very happy. this is the same kind of thing we've been talking about. This is an episode in which there's two kisses, but there's nothing else going on, even though she, Suzanne Plachet, in my opinion, has never looked better than she does in this episode. She looks absolutely fabulous. And nothing goes on there, too. And then in season three, she comes back as a different character in All the Scared Rabbits, in which she plays a woman who's stealing her daughter from her ex-husband and taking her to California. She needs a driver, and she puts an ad in the paper. And what do you know, Richard Kimmel shows up at the door one day, and this is a very funny scene because she just looks him up and down from head to toe the way normally men look at women and decides, well, I don't know who you are. You don't have a driver's license. You don't have anything, but that's okay. You can drive us to California. But in both of these, there's more kisses in that episode, too. So between the two of them, there's four kissing scenes between those two episodes. But Kimmel, again, does not close the deal on Suzanne Plachet, which is pretty frustrating. However, Kitty knows this better than anybody. There may have been a reason why David Janssen did not need to do that in these two episodes, because he was doing it off-screen. Right, Kitty?
Yeah. Yeah, David Janssen did have an affair with Suzanne Plachet during that time period, and supposedly his wife, Ellie, went berserk when she found out that Suzanne was being brought back for yet a second episode in the third season. You know, and it's interesting because the way that whole thing unraveled, it just shows that it was, and Suzanne Plachet, it was established, was not the only one. In fact, in Barry Morse's book, he briefly commented on it, and he said that, yeah, David Janssen definitely had a lot of extracurricular activities going on during the run of The Fugitive, and he even warned him that, this could all come back to bite him, which, you know, of his hard living, and, you know, which it did. He ultimately ended up in an early grave, I think, as a result of a lot of it. But, Suzanne Plachet, and eventually he did get to do it for real, I think, with Norma Sessions in real life, Angie Dickinson. It was documented that the two of them had a fling for a while. This was after he and Ellie were divorced, though.
He did it for real. How do you do it not for real, Kitty?
As in not on camera.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Yeah, well, Angie Dickinson is well known as having had a lot of affairs with leading men. She's always been very upfront about that. She's never really denied any of that. She's told a lot of stories over the years.
And, you know, and interestingly enough, both Suzanne Plachet and Angie Dickinson gave eulogies at David Janssen's funeral.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Suzanne Plachet has also been quoted as having said she will never discuss in public ever any of these rumors about how they had an affair. She's been asked, and she said outright, I'll never talk about it. Forget it, you know. But she, you know, so this is an example of how dangerous it is to take characters too seriously. People tend to think that actors are like the parts they play. This is certainly not true here. I mean, Kimmel is so celibate during this series, but off-screen, David Janssen was hardly that.
Yeah.
And that's just an example of that kind of thing. But
but it does show he was a good actor. He convinced everybody what a nice guy Richard Kimmel was.
You know, I heard somewhere that David Janssen complained to the executive producers a couple of times that they were not casting enough beautiful women. Did you hear that?
Where did you read that?
It was in one of the biographies. I was going through the library looking up all the Fugitive stuff. Yeah,
there weren't enough.
Yeah, there wasn't enough, and then. You know, it was interesting when they brought in Suzanne Plachet for season two. You know what I would have done? I would have made that the first episode of season two. They started off with that mock trial.
Yeah.
I thought that was it wasn't a good start. But when they started World's End and they had her and they had Barry Morris in that episode, that would have been a perfect episode because you're drawing the audience. You've got these characters. You've got this chemistry between these two. You know, right away, remember You know, I wonder how much David Janssen contributed to some of these scenes as far as, you know, can we do this or do that? Did you
well, in Ed Robinson's book, he says that. A lot of the producers and directors gave him credit for coming up with a lot of ideas while they were filming that were not in the script. So he had a lot of influence, but I find that hard to believe that he would actually say he doesn't have enough beautiful women around him. I think he has far too many, and it's absolutely ridiculous. At least in the beginning of the series, of course, they really kind of dropped that as the series went on. By the time you get to season 3 and season 4, that really goes out the window. They're no longer interested in providing beautiful women as love interests.
Hey, we got to ask Dave. No, Bob, we got to ask Dave. Dave, are you listening?
Oh, yes.
Is it Susan Oliver or Suzanne Plisette? Which one's prettier?
Well, I don't really recall Susan Oliver, but I never thought Suzanne Plisette was especially attractive. So,
really?
So, now, you know, I mean, I don't mean to be... I'll take Angie Dickinson myself.
Oh, you will?
Plus, now that I'm finding out she's easy, I don't know, she never went after me.
Well, and speaking of The Fugitive actually getting to do it, he did actually get to do it on TV eventually a few decades later.
Joan Collins, you mean?
No. In The Fugitive remake.
Oh, the remake.
Yes.
Yeah, I was gonna get to that, right. In the 2000-2001 series, Richard Kimball was finally allowed to have a sex on screen with a woman named Jenny in a story in which he finds a woman who is fixing up an old bed and breakfast.
Actually, the story is very similar to the one that has Janet. I mean, I noticed a lot of similarities between the two.
Yeah, but
that was my favorite episode in that series, Jenny. I thought that was very well done.
Really? Well, you actually think that she's kind of a letdown, is she not, compared to these other women?
But she was all right. She played her part well. I thought it was heartbreaking at the end.
Yeah,
well, it was heartbreaking, but really, could Kimball have been happy with a woman who couldn't even cook a TV dinner, right? I mean, I don't think the man wanted to live on takeout Chinese for the rest of his life.
What's interesting is the way it's filmed, and that is that, of course, it's a lot later. It's the year 2000.
Kitty, do you have a copy of that episode?
Huh?
Or, Kitty, do you have a copy of that Jenny episode?
Yeah.
I do, sure.
And so does Bob.
Yeah, bring it to that breakfast that morning. I'd like to see it again. I don't have a copy of too many of the Fugitive 2000 series.
Oh, well, Bob could make you a copy.
Make copies for you if you want.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever.
All right. Well, I was just going to say that it's a pretty graphic sex scene for TV, for network TV, even in the year 2000, but it's filmed in a very interesting way, and that is that they're together in the dark, and there's a thunderstorm outside, and the only time you get to see them doing anything is by these flashes of lightning that come in through the window. And when I make screen caps, I use stop action. So in all of the screen caps that I have on the Talking Fugitive webpage there, it was all done, a lightning bolt hits and the room is lit up, and all of a sudden she's removing her top, and then another lightning bolt hits and they're clicking at each other.
That's got to be at the lights are going out here. And this tonight was Fugitive Uncensored. This is one of the most interesting ones we've had yet. All right. Nothing until October the 31st. And then if you thought, you know, visions of Janssen's chest hair was scary, you could be back on Halloween and show you what scary is. So Bob and Kitty and Ken, my thanks to you. And I will see you on the 31st.
All right.
Okay.
And the rest of you, I hope to see you in about 1 hour. Dawn Wells is the guest tonight on Talkin' Television. Join me then. You're on Share a Vision Radio.